caught by Boquist, and he does an inverted twist. Is he in? He is. Touchdown, Bo Boquist, and that could be your dagger.
Simon Rumpfel has it. Simon inside the five. Sis boom ball. Simon Rumpfel, his second touchdown today.
UND Football 360.
Isaiah trying to get outside, a stiff arm, shuts him down, 20, inside the 15, down to the 13-yard line. Oh, that right arm, that stiff arm, and the book of Isaiah has given North Dakota a first down.
Analysis, commentary, news, and a look ahead. It's all things UND football. This is the UND Football 360 Podcast with your host, Kelly Howe, Matt Nelson, and Dave McNamara.
Well, it wasn't the start we were looking for on Saturday, but it's how you finish the game, and that's what UND did. They came out in the second half, and they played pretty much mistake-free football and finished off the number four-ranked team in the country at home with a big 27-24 victory. Kelly Howell, Matt Nelson, Tank McNamara here with you. And guys, did you see that second half coming when teams went to the locker room on Saturday for halftime?
I was slightly concerned. I didn't see that coming, but you know, I thought we would have had a little better start than that. But gosh, what a way to make a statement for the first home game, though. Number four team is coming in. A lot on the line. A lot of pressure, too, with 37 home games that we've won at opening home games. So, you know, there's a lot of pressure on the boys, and I commend them and the way they responded in the second half. That was just such a great statement.
Well, Kelly, you know, we'll get to the game review, but the atmosphere. Let's just say UND won the day when it came to putting on an event on Saturday.
Yep. Kudos to the athletic department. They did a nice job. The Alaris Center did a nice job. They had the band outside, opened the tailgate at 11 a.m., and people started to trickle in. I know I drove by at roughly 2:30, you know, for a 6 o'clock game, and it was full. And it, just like when you drive by on I-29 out there and look over, it was full from north to south, east to west. I mean, everyone was out there already. The student section was doing their thing again, I guess you want to call it, doing whatever they do down there.
Participating?
They were having fun, right?
Oh, yeah.
They were having fun, so it was good to see. But, yeah, the Alaris Center did a great job. The 6 o'clock, the call to put a night kickoff on this thing, great call. Mm-hmm. It was excellent. Excellent move. Beautiful day, 83 degrees, light winds, sun was out. Yeah, everything went well. It was just a nice job. And I wanted, you know, the athletic department doesn't always get the kudos they deserve. And so I wanted to give it, you know, to them here now and say, great job. Mm-hmm. And now the, you know, they should be able to build off that. Everyone had a good time. You know, even when it was 24/7 at half, we were out there having a drink in the hallway, and it didn't feel, you know, people weren't down. It was kind of weird. It was like, they knew we could play better. They knew we gave up, you know, a long run. They knew the first touchdown was a fluke type of thing. You know, we missed the sack. It was like, yeah, well, we got a chance here, you know, and everyone just kind of, it was real. Yeah, I like to see that, because if everyone was down and worried, it would be a fan base that doesn't believe, but it was like they believe.
Let's talk about the night game. Was it the athletic director's decision to do that, or does UND get the call on a non-conference game what time they want to start the game?
I think so,
yeah.
I think they chose to make an event out of it, and they chose the 6 o'clock game, and it was good. You had Montana coming into town. It was the right call.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah. And I'm going to piggyback on what you said, Kelly, and if you haven't seen the UND Insider footage and things like that they do, there was some great footage where they did with the drone and of tailgating area and just the montages that they're putting together.
I'm going to give my buddy Jack Michaels some credit. Boy, did he set the scene the pregame on
that
Saturday
that
for
was
the
amazing.
Radio.
Yeah.
You throw the video together, and I retweeted that yesterday saying kudos to the football department for putting that video together.
It's gone up in value, and you can certainly tell that, and the quality is really good. So if you don't follow that, hopefully everybody follows UND Football 360 on Twitter and our other social media, but follow that UND Insider page too.
Well, the UND Football 360 pregame show and website brought to you by Rumors Sports Bar, Grill, and Casino. Do you think they were having a good time over there on Saturday, Kelly?
Oh, big time.
Billy had the crew fired up over there.
Betting on horses.
Development Homes, Inc., gaming, simulcast, horse racing, pull tabs, blackjack, pig wheel. Kelly Howe Agency, Nodak Insurance. I was just listening to you guys talk quotes now.
Yeah.
Right. You are a real insurance man. Wow.
Yes. Hey, I just thought gotta help.
I thought you played one on TV, but
right.
Yeah.
Avoid T-lock shingles. That's right. What I learned. Yeah.
We're learning T-locks are an issue.
T-locks are not a good thing to have on your house.
Toasted Frog, fine dining in downtown Grand Forks and Fargo, the 1883 Collective, the NIL arm for UND Athletics. Make sure you check that out if you haven't. They could really use your support. In Interstate Industrial, steam cleaning and painting in the Bakken oil fields with Marty Shade, longtime UND football supporter. Great name in the football family at UND. And American Solutions for Business, Tank McNamara. I can help you out with any of your promotional product or apparel needs. Just go to tanklogo.com. Well, let's review the game a little bit, guys, on Saturday, because I rewatched the game Sunday morning, and wow, it was... It should have been closer at halftime. Let's just put it that way. I mean, there were some mistakes made in that first half.
Yeah, the run fits early. Defensively, it looks like we kind of had to figure out what we were doing. I mean, there was just a few issues there, missed sacks. You know, Navratil got the one, got the strip sack. That was big to get it, you know, show that we could get pressure. And UND got pressure all day from beginning to end. So pressure wasn't necessarily an issue, but run fits
finishing
early.
Too. Yep.
There was some of that. And credit to Montana though. The quarterback Ayat slipped out of there and hit the receiver Harris, I think, along the sideline for the first touchdown. Well, all right. You know, it's kind of one of those things where, okay, you know, you got us type of thing. And then the offense, it was interesting. Offensively, you know, most people remember we came out, we tried to throw three times. Well, it was to soften them up a little bit. Obviously, you know, I put a tweet out. My game plan was just to plow straight ahead, right up the middle. Well, that was their game plan too. You know, they knew it obviously, but they were gonna try to get Simon into the game, some quick easy throws. Well, they didn't connect though. You know, the third one was dropped. Bo went off his hands on the other one. It was just kind of, you know, it was an RPO right away. It got dropped, and I was just like, ooh boy. So we're backed up, and so they didn't run right away. People are like, what's going on? Wow. You know, it's just first half, I don't know. You summarize it as a feeling out half, I guess. The offense wasn't – they were always behind schedule. Montana was always ahead of schedule.
Yeah.
In the off – you know what I mean? So it was like a, gosh, we can't really get in sync type of thing. So, you know, 24-7 at half, you're kind of – and that's when I said in the opener, out in the hallway is kind of like, yeah, you know. You know,
the score looked worse than what the actual game was. One of those, right, where it's a little deceiving looking at the score going, wow, Montana's blowing them out. They weren't, right?
Yeah, it was back and forth somewhat. You know, we were getting stops, and the first two series, there was both close to three and outs. They stuffed us, we stuffed them, so it was back and forth, and then things just kind of came off the wheels came off the wagon a little bit for us. Yeah. And the, like you said, run fits, that's been an issue in the past where when we choose to run the three-man front, run fits are incredibly important. So, and the offenses are going to take advantage of that. So run fits, obviously we made some adjustments, and gosh, Orlando, two sacks as a nose guard,
yeah.
Those run fits make a big difference. So obviously, you know, we jittered over and got into the right gaps. So,
that long, the Gilman 67-yard touchdown run, that was one where when I go back to, you know, not fitting it up right, they traded the tight ends over. We decide, I think we must have had a call on if they do that, we bring the, because it's a closed side, bring the safety off the edge. So we brought number four off the edge, and the D tackle didn't move out a hole. So it what happened? He didn't slide out. So the outside backer was there, the safety was there, but the C gap I think was open. Is what happens while Gilman sees it and he's gone right down the field. We
and
don't
he
have
was
safety.
Gone, wasn't
yeah,
he?
He's fast.
Like there was no one around him.
UND wanted him out of high school. I remember it. He was. It was down to UND Montana, I believe. You know, good out of Minnesota. He's out of Minnesota.
So I was talking to you, thinking about guys. You've both been in locker rooms where you've had first halves like this, and what is said in the locker room, like? Is it different every game, or, you know, what was the, it sounded like, you know, we got to see a little of the behind the scenes on Saturday, and they weren't really shouting. They were just kind of trying to light a fire under them and just say, play a Simon Sharp football, as Dale Lennon used to say.
Well, we've been in that. I've been in that situation, and there's helmets that are hitting the floor, and what it takes is the seniors and the juniors on the team really getting and motivating the rest of the players on the team and taking leadership in that. And, you know, I think we saw that, you know, Wyatt and Orlando and some of those guys on defense, you know, Simon stepping up, and all of our players that need to play a key role in changing the momentum of that game, they stepped up and did that and led the team into that victory. And it was the players that did that, so hats off to them. The coaches did a good job in the scheme, but it was really, it comes down to the players just wanting to win that football game, and that's what happened.
So how does that work? Do you guys get a few minutes to yourselves before the coaches come in and
start talking
assignments? So yeah, players maybe get to address each other right away?
Yeah, and we had like three or four games my senior year like that. And, you know, we were all, it was us seniors telling each other, hey, you got to step up. We got to step up. I got to do this better. When we, at the locker room, yeah, the coaches come in and, you know, pretty much everything has been said at that point that we know what we need to do. And if you make mistakes, you kind of know what your mistakes are. So past that, and then the coaches just kind of reiterate, and then they get whatever they have to say off their chest, and then the changes in the that you're going to make, some of the run fits, you know, we got to be in this position, we got to get in this technique when they line up in this front on us. So
well, and I wrote in my game review that UND didn't change anything.
Yeah,
they knew it worked. They knew what they had was sound. They were getting pressure. They just need to line up correctly and adjust correctly. If Montana shifts, you know, if Montana motions, well, that's plain football. You know, you just have to do that correctly. The coaches didn't do anything differently. Same call, same just, hey, everyone settle down. You know, let's just make a play. When it's there in front of you, make the play. You know, it's when you're a secondary player like Hembree. Hembree had a nice game, two big pass breakups. When the play's there, make the play. When you're a DB, you get one, maybe three chances a game to make a play. You got to make it. Like, you have to or we lose type of thing. And that's kind of the pressure they're under back there. And Hembree came up with two big third down breakups. Just things like that where all of a sudden the second half, it just kind of came together. I think Montana got out of sorts a little bit. I think they didn't quite, I don't know, because they couldn't run.
Were you surprised that they didn't try and do things differently
downfield
in the second half?
Well, yeah. Downfield, that's what we were worried about, right? Bombs away, fast receivers type of thing. But then again, that being said, they couldn't protect. But we keep bringing up the pressure. UND had six sacks, 10 TFLs, and numerous other near misses. Probably could have been 8-9 sacks, pretty easy. So I guess they kept trying, but maybe they were trying to develop a deep shot, but it just wasn't there, and he gets sacked or he got flushed. But yeah, they were. UND was doing a nice job up front. I saw some creative stuff, Matt, too. I was going to – outside backer stuff, I saw like Rucker – the one Rucker dropped off, he, you know, not a typical on-the-line outside backer. He was a hole dropper, and then he came. And then he came late from the hole, so about 5 yards deep, he came running through the C-gap then.
Yeah, they must have seen – yeah, I like it. They must have seen something with how they do pass protection where – okay,
delayed.
That's a delay, kind of like a cross when the offensive or the defensive tackle and then the nose guard do a cross. Sometimes it's delayed. You do a jitter step to throw off the offensive lineman. And then so that second guy that comes around the back, it opens up a great hole to be able to get the quarterback. So,
well, it looked like the couple sacks Jack Tyken was involved in, they were kind of just making sure they had every slot filled because he was coming up the middle, right? And he's instead of coming from the outside.
Well, that's Ayotte. Ayotte's quick. I mean, Fife, he could run too. So UND, the gap integrity, if you want to call it that, was very good in this game. Like, UND will get out of sorts at times with their twisting and stunting, and all of a sudden there's a huge hole. The quarterback sees it, goes through it, you know, type of thing. There really wasn't that in this one. He was kind of bottled up, and he had to make a decision. You left, right, but he didn't know which one because UND had a guy slotted, you know, where they were supposed to be, and they were filling. And even if they did make movement, the next guy came and filled the, you know, filled the spot in the middle type of thing.
What I like about our defense is that we, it seems like in the from the past we've simplified our defense for the players to be able to understand it and be able to line up and play, but also we take our chances and we game plan and scheme it out and make sure that we get in the right checks and we take advantages of those situations still. So I think it's been a happy medium from last year to this year that we really have found a good balance in our defense and our play calling and our players' positioning.
Well, let's switch to the offensive side of the ball. And we found out in two games, UND can control time of possession, right? I mean, they're pretty good at that, right?
Well,
and
Bobby,
it's great to see,
yeah,
right?
No
keep
complaints
the other
there.
Team's offense off the field.
I like Bobby Houck's comment. Three times four equals 12.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's pretty much what it was, like the old Army 1940s. I mean, we're willing to get three a pop. And that second half, if you watch it again, it was second and seven. Third and three. You know, it kept being that same scenario. Then we got to 1 4th and one, and then you know what we're going to do there. So Quincy just sneaks it forward, start it all over again. And, yeah, it's interesting to watch. But, yes, quarterback play. Let's talk Simon here, you guys. 11 for 24, 97 yards. Obviously not ideal. Few drops in there. Few bounced passes. But his value, obviously that 11 for 24 can get better. We all know that. But his value was those scrambles, was just dropping back. And I tweeted during the game, I said, the new Simon Romfo mentality needs to be 1-2, nothing there, I'm gone. Okay, and that is what it has to be. Look, gone. And he just has, because he is faster so far. He's faster than the linebackers across from him. He's getting away from those guys quick. So, yeah, his scrambling, you could say, was a very, very important part. I mean, maybe the most important part when he scrambled. One of those was the third down. Third and long, he took off running, got converted the first down. So, you know, you kind of got to look at the whole package. Yeah, the passing game is a work in progress. There was some RPO stuff there that should have hit. They hit a couple. Nate DeMontenac, I want to mention him.
Yeah.
Two huge catches. Huge. And I didn't write about it in the – I should have, but third and eight, he got the first down. Third and 11, 4 minutes left. I don't think you remember the little slant play. It was third and 11, 4 minutes left. We're driving down for that game-winning field goal. He gets a slant from the right side and drags a guy for a first down, and he gets 12 or something like that. Huge play, because now we burn two more minutes, and we actually, I mean, we had a shot there, you know, to get the first down, but we end up kicking the game-winning field goal. So DeMontenac, he stepped up in this one because Bo had a tough time getting open. The connections just weren't there.
Do you think they're forcing it to him at times? You kind of get that? But, I mean, you got to get the ball in your playmaker's hands. But sometimes it just seems like maybe option two would be a little better at times.
Yeah, they were on Bo, it seemed like. I mean, some of the throws were low. And then the back shoulder, I think Montana's sideline, Bo turned around. I think he could have had it, but the guy was on him again and – Yeah, it was tough in this one.
I think that'll get better throughout the season, though, as the chemistry gets better between Simon and Bo and just learning. Because Simon, you know, this is his second starting game. So he's just learning the offense and how to lead it and run the offense in a game situation. So I think the chemistry between those two will get better and we'll see more interaction. And I think we caught Iowa State off guard last week or the week before a little bit with the capabilities of Bo. So and Montana knew exactly what they were getting with them. So they made sure they were tight on him.
And their corners are good, too.
I mean, yeah, they're good. They're a good team.
Credit words due. I mean, Montana's a good football team. It's going to get better.
Number four, and they were in the national championship last year. So they're good.
So Iowa State, we all came out going, wow, our offensive line surprised us a little bit. We weren't expecting that. Similar look this week.
Yeah, only one sack.
How do you guys grade the offensive line? Do you see that as a – still a positive for UND right now?
Yeah, I'd say B plus.
Not an A. I mean, they're not there yet.
B plus.
243 yards rushing on 49 carries. So I tweeted, in my write up, I think I said Isaac Frickdee's called 145 plays in two games.
Must be exhausted.
I mean,
or something.
What the hell? Seriously though, that's a lot. 72 and 73, and I mean, those are high-pressure plays. Hey, we're losing third and three, third and four. Those are tough. You know, God, what do we do? Can we run it? Can we get it? Or do we got to throw? But we're not connecting very much. I mean, he's got to make calls. He's got 10 seconds to come up with the correct call to move those chains. And UND is over 50% on third down conversions this year. So he's doing a nice job. But, yeah, it's offensive line. I like they're going to get better. They got to stay healthy. I think the right side's a strength. Seth Anderson, we know, is the best one they got. But I think Caleb Olson's doing a good job. He hasn't played yet, but he's older. He's been in the program for his fourth year, if I recall. But the right side seems to get the best push. Center, I think Gorder and Bucks are transfer, back and forth. No bad snaps, though. Did you guys see any?
No. I didn't see any.
Yeah.
No, usually that stands out.
Two first-year centers, and I was purposely watching. They both played, and chest high, waist high every time. So that's a good, that's a good sign. And yeah, they're going to get better, but what's going to happen? The evolution's got to come here, because UND knows full well that one of these teams is just going to load the ball. One of these teams is going to show up.
Let's see if Romfo can beat a team. Right?
Yeah, right. Yep. There's going to be seven guys in the box type of thing. Whereas last week there'd be five, then there'd be six. So they're counting box and okay. Favorable. Well, pretty soon it's not going to be favorable, and it's going to have to be one-on-ones. Bo, DeMontenac, those guys are going to have to beat their DB.
I think running back, again, we showed we're pretty good depth there.
Yeah.
And fun to watch the three-headed monster right now.
It's so amazing to watch Gavin run the ball and with Isaiah, and then just the balance that we have, too. It's just we saw right at the beginning of the game where our passes weren't connecting. Okay, we're just going to run it right at you, and you have to stop it. And that second series we had, I thought that was a great statement that we had. No, we're just going to run the ball right at you with Gavin and Isaiah. And, it worked one of the plays in when Isaiah got that nice touchdown off the edge there. But, our running backs, no complaints there.
Hey, defensively,
that's an A grade.
The yardage, 286 in the first half. Montana, so they're on pace for what's that, 572, okay, for the game. 34 yards in the second half, and 31 were that run, weren't they, on that last drive? 31 were on the last drive, so they had 3 yards in three drives before that,
and they probably had the ball for what, less than 6 minutes at that point?
Yeah, I think total five minutes in the second half. Total, they had it. Yeah,
and the last drive was.
Yep. And we had them fourth and one, and that was a good call, that QB draw they ran. That was a good call by them. They caught us, and, caught us because they knew we weren't going to load up the box for the quarterback sneak or anything, because you don't want to give anything up downfield. Yeah. So they made a good call on that one. But then, I know I'm going back to defensively, but the way UND responded, though, I think the next play was a pass break. We got a pass break up, and then that screen to recognize that's on third and long, that screen to recognize that we had three guys. We had defensive linemen peeling back, recognizing it. The outside back, I think it was Navratil, peeled back. He recognized it, and we tackle him for about a five-yard loss. Well, that got him out of field goal range. Now they're kicking a 54-yard bomb. If they run a play forward, curl, something like that, and get five, it's a 44-yard field goal. There's a chance a kid makes it and we go to overtime. So them running that screen and then, but us having the veteran presence to understand, what was happening behind us, that was a huge play in the game.
Special teams, there were some good things, and again, some things we need to work on. And kickoffs, you could really see what they were trying to do, and yep. I don't know, what was the deep guy's name on that third one? He shouldn't let it go out of bounds.
Yeah, he caught it right along.
Yeah, he was trying to tiptoe the sideline. I was like, ooh, he's not going to.
Then we tackle him at like the 18.
Yeah, it was just
they
horrible.
Lost 17
they were trying
yards.
To pin that corner, but there needs to be some work on that right now, because that's pretty good field position on two kickoffs.
Yeah, and they weren't even close either. It was first, I was standing down in that corner. That's where I was watching the first quarter, and, those things, they almost hit me. I'm like, holy, we're watching this thing like, whoa, okay. I mean, I get it. I get it. It's not easy, but yeah, you don't want to set Montana up at the 35 two times in a row, possibly three. But let's, positive though, let's talk about Elricks.
Yeah.
CJ Elricks. We wanted a kicker, right?
Yeah.
I mean, we wanted a, you know, a, we want our Juan Gomez Tegel, our Jeff Glass, our Cameron Paterkas. We want our All-American kicker, guy who just comes in for anything less than 45. Yeah. You know,
it's a given then.
Yeah,
right?
Go to the bathroom. You know what's on the board.
We were spoiled for years, weren't we?
Right, yeah, we were.
Never had to worry.
Right, and so he came in and he nutted both of those. Boom. I mean, snap, kick, boom. Time. It was like, oh, all right. I mean, we got that game winner. He didn't pause it. I mean, just boom, drilled it right through. It was like, all right. I mean, this kid, maybe do we got it now? I mean, do we got the kicker with confidence?
Well, he won the game for us. So, I mean, and that's just you can't ask for anything more going against the number four team in the country, winning the game with two field goals right at the end of the game, come back and win like that. That's the experience you want going into regular Missouri Valley Conference play, because there's going to be more tight ball games that we're going to have to win with a field goal. And with the confidence that we have in CJ and his confidence in himself, more importantly, to be able to go out there and win the game and just do it like, yep, I knew I was going to do it, and I like to see it, and I think we got a kicker.
All right, we're in business.
We're in business. I think we got it.
And it makes me wonder, and it was over the weekend, I saw Brian Kelly, the LSU coach. Did you see him ripping into his kicker, walking into the locker room at halftime? And I'm like, you don't see that very often. Usually they're a different breed. You leave them alone, they can figure it out. But, man.
He's a different breed.
Did you see that?
He rips into everybody. I mean, it's like, how do you play for that guy? Yeah. Like, he seems like the – well, and he's at Grand Valley.
Yeah, he was a treat to play against, too.
Yeah, he wasn't.
I lost my taste for him in the post-game press conference at Florence in 2003. I didn't really care for him in there. He was pretty cocky, Rodney.
Yeah.
But he just won a national title, so I should give him that, but –
Yeah.
Still didn't care for him.
Yeah, I don't think he's one of the more well-regarded coaches in the country. I mean, he can win games, and he's a good coach, but I don't know how well-liked he is. I guess who knows?
Well, let's take a trip around the Missouri Valley. Any surprises that you guys saw this weekend? Anything that stands out in the
other than our game?
Yeah.
We were probably the biggest surprise out of the whole slot of games that happened.
Damn, look at Noel. I watched the Northern Iowa St. Thomas, and Northern Iowa struggled mightily with St. Thomas. There was 10-3, I think they were down, and for in the third quarter, so they couldn't score against St. Thomas, and they had to pull it out late, you know, which I figured they would just because they have, you know, they should, but they struggled big time, and they were supposed to be going to that Mike Leach. Now that offense coordinator left this summer, so I don't know if they scrapped that idea, but they were supposed to be going to this air raid offense, and they're one to watch here to
see. Well, to stay with that St. Thomas League, though, what is it, the Pioneer League, how about Drake beating Eastern Washington? Holy cow, are things bad on the West Coast right now?
Well, it's sad to see the fall from grace that Eastern Washington has had the last several years. But, yeah, that's a surprise. But, boy, you know, hopefully things turn around for the Eastern Washington fans out there. But, yeah. I was a little bit surprised at the Missouri State and Ball State. I think Missouri State kind of, you know, going against an FBS opponent, kept it pretty tight throughout the game. So, I mean, Missouri State is showing that they are here to play football this year. And whatever they're doing, they've had two good weeks in a row. So Missouri State, they're in the hunt they're going to be good. They're going to be a force to be reckoned with this year.
One bad one here. Murray State lost to Butler. Oof. Butler is, you know, they're a little better lately the last year or so, but they're still a Pioneer team, and they're typically at the bottom half of the Pioneer. You know, this isn't their basketball team, okay? They're not very good. And Murray State just, oh, man. I mean, I know we had issues with them down there last year a little bit defensively. We kept giving up some things. We beat them, but to lose 19-17 to Butler is not a good look at all. I don't care
but
if you're the worst.
It's also nice to have some teams like this in the conference, right? You know, yeah, they gave us a little fits last year, but going into that week, they're all kind of
3 weeks. They're coming here and they're coming to Laris. They're our fourth home game in a row.
Yeah,
so Murray State. So we got speaking of which, we got fans. You got to remember that. Buckle up. This is second of four in a row coming up here at the Laris Center.
And then we end with our South Dakota series with. to finish out the season. So we got some nice stretches of home games.
Yeah,
the other game that I saw, Northern Iowa and St. Thomas.
That was a tight one. Yeah, that was just, ugh.
I don't know if Northern Iowa just didn't play well or, you know, hats off to St. Thomas for keeping it a close game. Because
there's issues there.
You know, I don't know what's going on, but that was a surprise score to me.
You know, Youngstown 59-25 over Valpo, that's a given. I watched some of that. Youngstown's just better than they are. NDSU 52-3 over Tennessee State. Yep. Wisconsin 27-13 of South Dakota. South Dakota, I think they were down 10. Got the ball, Wisconsin got a personal foul. They had first and goal down, I believe it was 10 or 7. One of the two, third quarter. They had a chance. I mean, South Dakota had a real chance to make this thing interesting, and they didn't get in. I think they had to kick a field goal then, and then Wisconsin pulled away late. But, you know, the Yotes played well there, represented well. Illinois State 24-17 over North Alabama. I just saw Illinois State lost their starting running back. It was a Tyshawn King, isn't it? No, wrong name. I can't remember.
But big loss for
them. Big. Their starting guy, he's all conference kid, so that's going to hurt them. They typically don't score a ton of points anyway. They like to play a safe variety of football, so that'll be tough. Eastern Illinois 27-20 over Indiana State. Yeah, whatever. And South Dakota State 45-24 over Incarnate Word.
Some of that late in the game. Incarnate get some points? I didn't follow that game
close.
At all.
No, it was close. Okay. Closer. You know, I don't think anyone was really worried that South Dakota State was going to lose, but it was closer than you think through the first half from what I remember. Southern Illinois, 31-17 over Austin Peay. Austin Peay's not as good, but they're a decent program, so that's, you know, a standard win for Southern Illinois. I think they're going to be good this year. They got to replace the quarterback. You know, Nick Baker gone, the little guy running. Speaking of little quarterbacks, he was 5'8". You remember that guy?
Yeah.
5'8", about 200. Yeah. Little bowling ball out there just making – he's Romfo, but bigger. big, hefty kid, shorter than Romfo, but he's running. So it can work is what I was saying. That kid ran around, just made plays all game. So we don't have to worry about the height of our quarterback. He's just got to make plays, right?
You know, real quickly – how about the national rankings? Were you guys surprised how far UND jumped?
Yeah,
a little bit.
No. I mean, you know,
it's nice to have the respect, but that's quite a jump, isn't it?
Yeah, that was.
And
quite
we'll
a
take
jump.
It. I'm not complaining, but right. I was like, wow,
that was quite a jump. I
don't know if it's Montana being at 4 and then us being at what were we
23.
Yeah, I mean that's a pretty big jump going from 24 up. You know, I wouldn't have been surprised if Montana was down to 6 and we were maybe 9 still behind them, just because we're at home and there's other excuses you could make of right. You know, Montana, you know, was beating us, whatever. But yeah, wow, you know, we'll take it, but we just gotta represent for the rest of the year now.
And how about the attitude coming out of the locker room this week? We're here to win a national title, not Montana. I was like,
good.
That's what you love that's to hear out of your football team right now.
100%. 100%.
Because we've had history.
Yeah, we have. And, you know, we haven't shied away from that on this podcast where we've made it the point several times where it's that senior leadership, it's that junior leadership that's really taking control of the attitude of this football team. And you know, we didn't really know what team was going to show up this year. Is it going to be a continuation of our loss last year, or are we making something new and special this year? And so far, so good. I think that it hats off to those seniors and juniors on this team taking leadership and changing the philosophy and the attitude.
Well, this is our Development Homes 360 guest segment, and we're going to Idaho, guys. We got the Bengals play-by-play announcer Scott Gross in his first year, but no stranger to Idaho, I hear. Is that correct, Scott?
Yeah, no, actually not. I mean, it's nothing new here. I mean, I've been around Idaho State. This is actually my second year as the voice of the Bengals, but I've been in the Pocatello area since 1976 and did covered all the high schools in the city of Pocatello for about 35 or so years before I took over here at Idaho State last year.
Scott, hey, this is Kelly Howell from UND Football 360. When looking at the Idaho State program out there, spirits really seem up They seem high. Cody Hawkins, he brought him in last year, son of Dan Hawkins. He seems to have energized this program a little bit. Can you speak to, I mean, what he's done to kind of bring, you know, bring Pocatello up and kind of get things going out there?
Well, I mean, the great thing about Cody Hawkins is he's one of the most positive, transparent, sincere guys you'd ever want to talk to, football coach or not, okay? And people around the state, and especially here in Pocatello, know and knew what Cody Hawkins was like. He actually played his last high school game here in what at that time was Holt Arena, now the ICCU Dome, against Pocatello High School. And I had the pleasure of calling that game. It was a state title game back in, I believe, 2004. And then he and I got to work together last year. My first football game was his first game coaching here at Idaho State. So we had a little history there. But folks around the area knew the name. They knew, of course, Dan and the success he had at Boise State, and then over at Colorado, and then ultimately at UC Davis, where Cody was before he came here. But, yeah, he has energized the fan base here. Pauline Theros has done a great job as the director of athletics here over the last 5-6 years. A lot of improvements. The campus is seeing a lot of facilities improvements for the players, from the renovations they've done here at the ICCU Dome to a nutrition center in the sports med building, and the updated Jared Allen Strength and Conditioning Center that was remodeled and opened this summer. So, yeah, there is a lot of excitement around Idaho State athletics and this football program in particular.
Keeping things local, in Pocatello, Kobe Tracy, quarterback, transferred back home, it appears, from Utah Tech. It was that was the former Dixie State, I believe. He transferred back, 5,800 yards, 38 touchdowns at Utah Tech. And, you know, I was reading that article about him. It was interesting. It sounds like the Bengals didn't necessarily recruit him too hard. I mean, I'm sure they obviously were aware of him being in town there, but they didn't recruit him too hard. He ends up going to Utah Tech, but then comes home as a graduate transfer. Kind of a cool story, actually.
You know, it's a great story. I mean, Kobe Tracy, quarterback Highland, to a state championship in 2017. He was actually on the same team as current Atlanta Falcon Tommy Togiai, who went on to play at Ohio State for his college career. And then Kobe, you know, I think it was simply one of the situations where at the time he came out of high school, you know, maybe it wasn't the right fit for the particular coaching staff, or, you know, maybe Kobe wanted to just try something different, right, outside of Pocatello. I really can't speak to why that happened, but I can speak to the fact that when he expressed an interest to come here this year, Cody Hawkins did not pass on that, because he is a great quarterback for this system. They ran a somewhat similar system with the Trailblazers down at Utah Tech the last couple of years. And then, of course, John Hughes, the current offensive line coach here at Idaho State, he took over this year when Mark Weber retired, and he was the offensive line coach at Utah Tech the last couple of years. So Kobe had familiarity with Coach Hughes. One of his teammates, right tackle Ty Hyde, played at Utah Tech, and the starting center for this week, Striker Rashid, also was down at Utah Tech. So there's a lot of connections there, and it's a great story to have Kobe come back to Pocatello for his final collegiate career, and so far, so good.
Hey, Scott, this is Matt, UND Football 360. Thanks for being on today. Just to piggyback on some of the discussion about Kobe, I watched the Oregon State game and the game from last week. Looks like you're in 10 personnel for most of the game, wide open offense, lots of no huddle, inside zone with one running back. Is that a offensive coordinator preference? Is that based on the personnel that you have in your recruiting process? Or, hey, we're in the Big Sky, we have to be wide open, guns a-blazing offense?
Well, I think it's maybe a combination of all those factors. But more than anything, that is Cody Hawkins' offense. And now Buddy Blevins, who came in as the co-offensive coordinator, he's been in town since January. But, yeah, this is back in the national championship year of 1981, and in that time frame, there was the term the throwing Idahoans, and that was the Mike Maturek days and so forth, and that's kind of been revived here somewhat with this program and Cody's offensive mindset. Now the difference probably between this year and last year with this offense is that the offensive line is healthy. They have much more depth, much more, actually, I don't want to say much more experience, but more experience. And really the Bengals struggled to run the football last year. It was almost non-existent, to be quite honest. The leading rusher was backup quarterback Hunter Hayes last year for Idaho State. So this year, Donnie Austin has come in. A couple other guys, Keo Wakawi, and also Dason Brooks, who was a converted defensive back, I believe, in the running back position. So the Bengals have shown the propensity and the ability to run the football more this year. But no, this is a passing offense, make no doubt about it.
Switching sides of the ball, it appears, you know, from the tape I've watched that in a kind of a strange twist, UND is going to be facing yet another 3-3-5 this week.
Right.
And I am pretty sure they didn't face a 3-3-5 last year once. And it's the third week in a row because Montana was lining up with three down last week. And Iowa State was running a 3-3-5 the first week. And we're like, okay, boy, that's unique. Well, now I turn on your guys' game, and there's another 3-3-5. So it seems like teams are morphing into that.
Well, let's talk about that a little bit, because the defensive coordinator for Idaho State is Josh Runda, who spent time at Iowa State before he came to Pocatello. So that's where you see that connection. And you know, the 3-3-5, it's something different. You're right. But I think what you're saying is it's also maybe becoming something that teams are looking to adopt. And obviously it worked for Montana last year. They got to a national championship game with that defense. And Idaho State is, they've got some good personnel, and it's a, you know, they run that three high safety. So sometimes they'll bring a couple of the safeties up and almost have four, maybe even sometimes five down, you know, five guys on the line, but just those three down linemen. And they've been able to generate some pressure. I mean, they've got six sacks this year, and those sacks have come primarily against teams that were trying to run the football. So it appears to me that this defense now, in its second season under Josh Runda and the defensive players, they've adopted this, and they're starting to get a pretty good feel on it. Is it perfect as of yet? No, but it's also only two games into this season. But I think folks in the area are seeing signs that this defense can make some things happen.
Well, Scott, it's a hard place to play, the Alaris Center in Grand Forks, but Idaho State has maybe figured something out. They've won their last two games there.
Right.
What's been the key for that, and is there a lot of confidence coming to North Dakota this weekend?
Well, you know, quite honestly, I mean, I've been around the program, but not that close to it, so I can't really speak to, you know, why they have the success they had the last couple of times there. But I will tell you that I walked into practice this morning. It was the first time that I had seen the team since Saturday, and talked to a couple Railbirds down here who know a lot about this football team and this program. And they said it's been a good week of practice. There's definitely a positive vibe going on. You put up 50 points, and I get it. It was a D2 program in Western Oregon, but there were a lot of good things to take away from it. Now, again, it was not perfect. Seven fumbles by the Bengals last week, and they lost not a one of them. Now, they cannot put the ball on the turf that many times against a top-10 team like the Fighting Hawks and expect to come out of the Alaris Center with a win. But those are also correctable errors, and it could have simply been, you know, the hype of the first home game, and maybe a touch, and I don't want to say complacency, but, you know, maybe you just kind of lose your concentration momentarily when you have a big lead. I don't know. But I feel like this football team is pretty confident, but know full well that they've they've got a battle on their hands when they get into the Alaris Center on Saturday afternoon.
Well, we're expecting a good one, and we can't wait for the Bengals to get to North Dakota and kick off on Saturday. And, Scott, thanks so much for taking the time today, giving us a little in-depth look at Bengal football. And, hey, enjoy your trip to North Dakota this weekend.
All right, guys, I appreciate you having me on. And, yeah, we'll be there. Looking forward to it. First time in North Dakota for me. First time, obviously, in Grand Forks. And I've heard a lot about the Alaris Center, so looking forward to getting there. And, hey, good luck to you guys the rest of the week. And I'll just close it out with Roar Bengals Roar.
Well, it's time now to look ahead. The Toasted Frog 360 game preview. It's a 1 o'clock kickoff. Idaho State, Alaris Center. It is the place to be. And I think what the fans right now can do is buy a ticket and show up Saturday. That would be doing your part, right? I mean, this team deserves it right now.
100%. They're playing well. The energy's high in the program. We keep saying that, but it is. The energy's high in Grand Forks. I mean, they're feeling it this year. They like the product. And I said during the game to somebody, I remember, fans could be up more on defense, yelling more. Okay. They do on third down. And it got, but they need to be rewarded. And I wanted to get this on here. I know I just jumped into it, but they need to be rewarded. Back in the day when they were loud, 2001 to 2007, okay, they were rewarded with third down stops because they got loud and UND stopped them and forced a punt. Well, the next time they were 5% louder. The next time, 5% louder. I mean, they just kept building and building because they were rewarded.
UC Davis.
Right.
Semifinals.
Yeah.
No, eight false starts.
They were rewarded, right?
Kept going and going.
They see the false starts. So, hey, we're doing our part, right? It's going to get there. And I think it'll be pretty soon, it'll be second down. You know, they'll start to be a little louder. And then third down will be a given. That's what we got to get to. And it's, but Bubba alluded to it, I believe, during the week. He said, you know, we need to do our part too. He goes, those fans want to yell. They want to flip out. They want to have a great time. We got to give them something to yell about. So if they're up on third down and the whole place has 11,000 people standing up screaming, we got to get off the field.
Especially with a 6 o'clock kickoff. They're a little louder, right?
Yeah.
They're a little more ready to go, yeah.
So, yeah, and UND did that in the second half. And I was there, and it got louder and louder and louder. And by the end, it was they were ecstatic. The lady in front of me was losing her mind.
Yeah.
Mom, she had a little kid with her and stuff. Husband, I mean, they were having a great time. And she was just, I mean, she was into it more than anyone in the Alaris Center. It was great to watch.
And we saw it last year in the NDSU game. It was from start to finish. And that's what I'm just get up on your feet right away.
Right.
Get loud.
Yep.
Because you do make a difference in that building. And let's talk about the Alaris Center. It's been a very tough place for opponents to play, but Idaho State has had our number the last two visits. They've won here. And you're thinking, what? Idaho State? But we only have a 4-3 record against them in D1. And, you know, we just talked to Scott Gross, and it sounds like they really haven't had anything since 1981 to be excited about. So maybe this is something for them to get up on.
Yeah, they're certainly a sleeper team. And with that Big Sky offense, 10 personnel, they're wide open. So we have to be prepared. And our secondary has to be on point all game because they're going to come guns a-blazing at us, and they know that they're going to come to win the football game. So it's going to be a good test for us, I think. It's going to be a good second home game test. It's a formidable opponent, Idaho State. They're well coached. But Kelly and I were talking about it, and Tank and we're talking about this is the third week in a row that we see a 3-3-5 defense.
And let me address that real quick. You guys both played on that side of the ball. Is this a good thing to have 3 weeks in a row with very similar classroom type discussions?
Yeah. We get,
sure.
Yeah, we get
it would
to
be
that
in our favor right now.
Again. Yeah, you wouldn't want to, you know, you wouldn't want a 4-3, you know, some, you know, Tampa 2 to show up. You know, it'd be different. You'd have to spend a lot more time. Well, yeah, now they're in the groove. I mean, it's, and here's the thing. I'll get into their defense in a little bit, but it's similar to Iowa State. It's like Scott talked about. It's similar in the look on the back end, you know. But, hey, back to Iowa State in the Alaris Center. 2015, I believe I was doing the sideline reporting for that one. We lost 37-31. We couldn't stop them. And there was a little different offense than this one. It was spread out, no huddle, but they had tight ends. So what they were doing is max protecting. and just working us downfield. We couldn't get any pressure on them, and the game plan wasn't working at all. And if you recall, we end up going 7-4. We played our best football the last four games of the year, thought we were getting in the playoffs because of it, and didn't get in. Well, that year, Idaho State went 2-9. One of their two wins at the Alaris Center. It killed us. So that's when everyone started getting worried about Idaho State on the schedule. 2018, they show up again. They beat us again. I think it was 25-21. We end up going 6-5. As we all know, you have to be 7-4, right, to make the playoffs. We lost again, and it was a Potato Bowl. What's this weekend? A Potato Bowl, guys. So it's a little eerily
You can just leave,
similar.
Kelly. I mean, yeah. Just yeah. Everything you just said just sucked the life
out
of us. Come on, man.
We're doing
my
good
will
there,
to live here. Come on, man. Yeah.
Are we 0-2 this year? I mean, yeah. No. But hey, I'm
I thought
just
this
saying,
was the
I,
new
hey,
Kelly Howe this hey, year.
Hey, yeah, I know.
Hey, but, I mean, that
just
was,
saying, guys.
What'd you say, 2018? No, so how no. much does that stick with a program, though, when everyone's completely different? Even the play-by-play guy wasn't even around in 2018.
Just the fans. Yeah, you know, fans remember.
We remember.
Yeah,
we're upset about it.
Apparently,
we're
remember,
not going to let it down.
I remember everything. Apparently, yeah. So yeah. It's going to be all right, folks. I don't mean so to
on paper. Yeah. Is this a favorable matchup for UND going in on paper?
Yes. And if we could start, let's start on the offensive side of the ball for UND. Okay, 3-3-5 again, but it's a cautious 3-3-5. Montana's was a reckless, kind of, not reckless, but a crazy, twisting, a lot of pressure, 3-3-5, okay? Iowa State was a cautious 3-3-5. They left their five back. They didn't bring any pressure. They might have brought one
backer. Move the ball, and you're not going to score on us.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah, you're not throwing deep, and that's why UND didn't. So that's what this is. But I have a hard time believing after two game tapes now that they're going to sit in a 3-3-5. And let us run for 4 yards before they make contact. I mean, it's not, you know what I mean? We'll have the ball all day if that happens. So I'm expecting teams, you know, and I know for a fact UND is expecting teams to now come out with something unique, you know, against them to where they have to adjust and throw the ball. But this week it'll be interesting to see because, you know, on tape they don't do much up front, but they like their defensive line. They got the strength of the team, for anyone listening, is the defensive line. And their linebackers, three linebackers, 6'3", 6'1", 6'4". Long, lengthy linebackers, you know, obviously RPO game. First thing I'm thinking about, they could get in the way, you know, disrupt the RPO games, first thing, you know, or get off blocks. They can hold you, you know, long arms, wingspan, right? So it'd be interesting that the strength is up front. I don't think the secondary is as good. But, yeah, it's just, Matt, this week, more of the same. I mean, we do what we do, right? Keep doing it.
I think we have the same game plan. We offensively, we come out, we run the ball right at them. And if we stick with it, stick on the ground, I think that's the key to this game where, you know, Gavin Zbarth, Isaiah, and Seidel, I think we stick to those guys and come out early that first series and see what we can get with the running game right away and force them to stop our running game because that's the way to break their will in this 3-3-5 defense.
They're gonna try to see any defensive coordinator would line up just like they do and see what happens. First drive, I think we got to run it and just break them right away break that defensive coordinator right away and say, okay, you want to see if you can hold up because they're not going to walk guys up right away. They're going to see if they can hang.
You know, I don't think you do the three passes to start. Hey, we'll even tell you where we're running the ball until you can stop us. We're just going to keep going and let the passing game work itself out as the season goes along. But let's stick with what's working.
Yeah, and they'll start that way, I think. And then I fully expect UND to get yards, you know, between the tackles, just like they always do. Then that's when the chess game starts, is because now Isaac Frickdy has to adjust to what they're doing. One of the middle safety in the back is going to walk up. So now they're going to have four linebackers. They're probably going to walk one of them up onto the line. Now it's going to be a 4-3, you know, 4-3-3 type of or whatever, you know, so with the corner out there always. But yeah, it's interesting. It'll be a bit more of a chess match. I can't imagine them doing what they've been doing against UND. It just doesn't work because Western Oregon didn't play that way.
Well, if they do give UND fits with the run game, how would you guys like to see Frickte use Romphel right now to get this young guy some confidence, give him some good looks? I mean, because that the part of the game hasn't been pretty so far. How do you like to get him involved with his arm?
Well, the hitches were there.
Yeah.
Those look good.
Yeah, yeah.
The slants looked good. He hit the one to Caden Dennis. He got smacked. Has anybody in the history of UND football got hit harder across the middle than Caden Dennis? My God, remember the South Dakota State guy 2 years ago?
I think
he knocked him. Well, he got ejected for targeting.
Yep.
I mean, the kid gets up and, you know, he was back the next week, I think. But the kid, he got hit again on that one, held on. There's a gain of like 5 or 6 across the middle. Those are the throws I think Romphel can make. I put my write up. They got to dial it in. I think right early here, dial it in. What throws can Simon make, or what throws does Simon want to make? Does he feel like, yep, I love making those throws versus shoehorning in a back shoulder fade? If the if he's not doesn't like them, if his timing isn't there, like Tommy loved those.
Yeah.
You know, if the timing isn't there, the feel isn't there. All right, we don't run them. You know, posts don't seem to be there at all. I mean, we've got two of them picked off.
Yeah.
Now this year, so you know, things like that, I guess.
And for a post, I think it's something that we have to set up early in the game to use in like that third quarter situation where, you know, we've done all the legwork with the run game and the short stuff, and then we set up those corners for that post route and that safety for that post route where we can take advantage of some of their weakness in their defense. So, but, you know, we still have to try it eventually, too. I mean, we have to be dynamic as an offense, and we still have to try to take our shots downfield. And because we're going to have to do that eventually to win a national championship. Well, so we're going to have a deep ball eventually.
I don't see them sitting with five DBs back. It just doesn't make any sense because UND is just going to plow the whole game. So, and this isn't Iowa State. They can line up like Iowa State, but they're not Iowa State. Okay. So I sense some shots. I do send some shots downfield this week because of that, because that middle safety is going to come up. They're going to morph around a little bit, and all of a sudden it's going to be Bo one-on-one.
You see first down?
Oh, yeah.
Shots on first down.
You might as well. If you think, well, the way we play, you know, you might as well. Or, you know what's interesting, too? You mentioned that. Teams are running on third and long now. We picked one up last week. Zbarth, I think, at 11 up the middle is 3rd and 8, and we just ran straight ahead. And we got, like, 11 yards. Like, teams are starting to sense a little bit where, you know, overreaction to 3rd and long by defenses. And the actual play is the run. You wouldn't want to try it and not get anything, and then you look like the dumbest O coordinator in the world, right? You know, if you get 0 yards. But if you get it, you look like a genius. And so, I don't know. I'm sensing some shots downfield this week. I don't know if they'll connect. But they're going to be there because Iowa State can't sit the way that – or Idaho State can't sit the way they were on tape so far.
Man, I want to ask you the defense performance last week in the second half, how do you build off that?
More of the same.
Come right in on that first play and pick up right where you left off.
Quite honestly, you flush that Montana game as soon as you can, and you say, okay, we're going to reset and we're going to come back in. And we talked about it on and off air, but Wyatt Pettigo taking leadership in this team, that we're here to win a national championship, not to beat Montana. If they come in with that attitude on defense every single week, they're going to be good and they're going to be confident. And we want that in our players and coming into that football game. So hats off to those guys. And if they can do that, if they can flush that Montana game, get rid of it. Okay. It's a 0-0 ball game. We haven't won a game, you know, have that edge where you're still the underdog. I think that's what we need to do for defense.
Kelly, 6 sacks last week. We talked about it earlier. We probably could have had 10, 12, 13 of those. Are we going to see the pressure this week like we did? Do you see that? We're going to get to the quarterback?
No.
They're out too quick?
They're out, throw it out too quick. We're going to get there because they will. I mean, I shouldn't say every single pass comes out quick, but let's say 50% of them come out quick. So you can't guess when it's going to be held and send 6 guys, and now you're one-on-one versus they like the deep crossers, they like the pick routes, you know, double crossers picking each other, they like that thing, or they'll run off the umpire, cross right off the umpire trying to pick. You know, they love that stuff, and that's part of this. I think it kind of seems like the run and shoot is what it seems like, a hybrid of, you know, Mike Leach's stuff, you know, Hal Mumme stuff with June Jones, Timmy Chang, run and shoot offense. It's just downfield crossing, but they will, but you'd have to guess when to bring pressure. And I just don't see UND doing it a whole lot. I think they'll bring one, you know, maybe bring a linebacker or something like that. But this week I'm sensing bracket coverages. UND ran that against Sam Houston State years ago when they ran a similar type offense, 10 personnel. Linebackers are going to bracket out. Safeties are deep. Corners are off. And everything's in windows. Now, they're going to look for those windows, but when they hit it, if they catch it, you got to smack them. Boom, drop them. No yards after catch. Get up, move it again. There isn't an offensive coordinator in America that's going to throw hitches all game and slants all game. They are going to want yards eventually, okay? That's when you got to time up something and get after them up front. But, yeah, it's not one of those games. Like last week, we brought a lot of pressure because they had tight ends in the game. Tight ends aren't receiving threats typically, and they'll keep them into block, so we bring a lot of pressure against tight ends. This week, I'm expecting a lot of drop seven.
Ten personnel. We have to have guys back there. We can't bring them.
Yeah.
So, concern you at all this week? When we can't get the pressure, we saw what the pressure did last week for our defense. If it's not going to be there, does that change?
It'll be a good test for our outside backers for sure. Well, our outside backs and our linebackers. I mean, we're going to
be busy
in pass coverage a lot of the game. So that we've been tested against the run. We know we can get in the backfield. We can get tackles for loss, sacks. All of those things are great. The test is going to be our passing coverage with our linebackers. That's going to be the key on our defense this week, I think. So far, we've done a good job at some of those pass breakups. But we aren't going to be tested 90% of the game like we haven't in the past. 90% of this game, those linebackers are going to be in pass coverage.
And here's the caveat that, you know, we say we're not bringing pressure. If we get pressure with our three down or four, we'll probably go to a four down look, I suppose, something like that. If we get pressure with those four, we're in business. I mean, it's over.
It's over
because now we'll just drop seven and cover everything up. That's what NDSU plays. They play Tampa 2, you drop seven. You might bring a fifth guy, but they try to just get pressure with the front four. So that's why you typically don't drop back against NDSU, is because you don't want to sit there and let those four work. You just get it out or you run up the middle. Well, this week, you know, they're going to get it out. So if we can get the one guy one-on-one matchups with our front four and we're getting through there, then now we're in business. It's going to be a fun day.
And the way Orlando's playing in the middle, I mean, that's certainly on the table. I mean, two sacks in one game for a nose guard, that's pretty good. So against a really good offense. So, that's on the table to get pressure with just three guys up front and the way that those guys are playing. So I'm excited to watch that.
My favorite part of this job, the game prediction segment. I'm not a big fan of this, but I'll do it. And I'll start us out.
Not to boast, but we were pretty good last week
all
with our prediction.
And Kelly, way to describe
detail
that out and then find the clip and repost it.
Yeah.
I noticed you didn't include what I said, that we'd probably be down by a couple scores at halftime. You just gave all yourself the accolades, I guess. Right. But I guess I have to my couch and get a sponsorship on this show. I mean, I'm the only one that isn't.
Get your own screencast recording.
Yeah, I guess so. I have to start a new business, I guess, and sponsor the show.
I think we're going to take care of business on Saturday, and I'm going 35-14. I think we're due for a game like this, and we're going to put some points on the board this week and manhandle them from start to finish. I don't know if that 14 is too much, but I really think our defense is playing good football. But now that you hear, you know, no pressure, that's a different animal this week, so hopefully we can play well and keep them out of the end zone.
Yeah, I'm similar to you, Tank. I think I don't see the letdown. I know fans are worried based on last year, you know, beat NDSU, get shut out the next week against Northern Iowa. You can't, you know, follow up the big win, like build. I don't see the letdown this week. I think this is a different mindset with this team. I think they understand based off last week. Yeah, I'm gonna go 31. Because we're just the way we burn so much clock.
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know if I can pick in the 40s yet or anything. So I'm going to go a 31-17, you know, but I think a comfortable win, but they're going to get a few You know, just a 31-17, nice methodical win.
We're going to break a couple. That's why I went 35.
Maybe a defensive score.
Yeah, defensive. Or
I'm sensing something.
Run one back, pick, maybe?
One, a pick, linebacker interception.
Pick six, maybe?
Is what
yeah.
Something like that.
Well, that's a good baseline to go off of, so you give me a lot of things to think about before I say mine. But I'm going probably that 38-21. I think Idaho State, they have a good offense. They have a lot of weapons. You know, I think, you know, it's going to be a learning experience for our secondary and our linebackers, so I think we might get caught a couple times where they might get the, you know, might go back and forth that first half, like a 21-14 halftime that we're winning, and then we'll start to pull away in that third quarter. So 38-21 final score.
This game has a completely different feel if it's in Idaho this year, right?
Oh, for sure. So. Yeah.
Well, they finally updated it, I think. Last couple years ago, they updated it, but it's a time warp in there. You walk in. I went there 2008, I think it was, and they didn't change it till a couple years ago, but they had the avocado green, the orange, Brady Bunch colors, you know, that type of thing. Those were the seats. Each section was a different color. The yellow, the mustard
kinda
yellow.
Kind of had that Looney Dome.
That's
feel
the fad
like
now.
Iowa,
yeah.
Didn't it? Northern Iowa feel.
And you walk
that.
In, it's like, and then I remember it was UND went out there, let's call it 2016, I think, is when they went back out there and they won. It was a tight game, but I remember talking to Coach Schmidt after the game and he's like, our guys were dead. He goes, they walked into that building and everyone was dead. He goes, I had a bad feeling about this one. He goes, it's just the aura, just the feeling in there was not, didn't juice you up. But so, yeah, I'm glad it's not out there at all. The Alaris Center is quite different than their building.
Well, tickets available, Ticketmaster.com. Go to UND Athletics, find them on the website, and you'll be able to get tickets for the game. Buy them early, though. Get them in, and then tailgating. Hey, it's going to be a morning tailgate.
It should be a nice weekend, yeah.
1 o'clock kickoff, we can't complain. So, hey, it's bad it's not Saturday yet because I'm ready for this
one. I'm excited, yeah.
And they've given us two good weeks of football so far, so let's keep the train going, and hopefully we're talking about another win next week. So thanks for joining us. This has been another 360 game preview with UND Football 360.